Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, it was awesome being able to talk to you. I love being able to share about the business junk drawer because it is a very easily forgotten area within organizations, but it plays a huge role in people's lives and the stress that they experience every day.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. We have been talking with Sarah Becker, and we talked about four different areas. Well, we first talked about what a junk drawer is, and it contains all the tasks, the chores, the problems, the issues that we have that cause us worry on a daily basis. And we, a lot of times, don't have time to really address them the way we should. And so they end up piling up. And the three areas that we talked about were financial anything. So, you know, anytime money is coming in and out, we need processes to do that. And a lot of times we don't set up the processes to handle a volume. And so it's important to figure those pieces out. Sarah gave us some great tips for that, and I'll include the episode in the show notes so that you can revisit that particular episode and hear the details. Also, we talked about customer service and supply chain issues and how to address, you know, customer service projects. And, you know, having continuous ways in which you're improving these first three junk drawers, the financial anything area, the customer service area, and quality assurance is the third one, will really keep you kind of with your fingers in the mix, not doing all the work, but really just staying on the organizational part of, you know, really improving the processes and ways in which you're building your business. Sarah is the founder and CEO of Clean Simple Business. Sarah has been a process improvement investigator and implementer for 10 years. She most recently worked for a Fortune 50 retailer where she had a successful track record of improving and enhancing processes throughout the organization, most notably reducing the amount of time it took to complete a monthly task from 3 business days to 1, and a weekly report from 1 business days to 20 minutes. That's really a lot of time she frees up for people. So why does she do it? Well, Sarah has been in many positions and has worked overseas with other companies when she was getting her MBA, where tasks took way too long to get done and they were slow and painful. It bothered her so much that she had to come up with a better way of doing things, and that is what she did. So far too often, she sees companies operating off manual, outdated tasks that are error-laden and lead to profit loss. So working with Sarah can resolve these issues, resulting in a reduction of errors, increased clarity, improved peace of mind, scalability, and profit margins. Sarah believes that people work harder than they need to. Why not work together to make your life work easier and more enjoyable? So welcome to our conversation, Sarah. Happy 2022.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the new year.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of work that we're already needing. And I thought during the month of January, it would be great to kind of get our businesses in order. And I had not heard of business junk drawers until I met you and we started talking about it. Also, you acquired a BA degree from the College of St. Benedict and in math and history. And it's just interesting, your path in a home where both your parents were computer programmers, that you've realized that they must have been really efficient, I'm thinking.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
All right.
Yes, things are very clean and efficient and and programmed to a T.
Yeah. And so that probably helped you really understand that, you know, being efficient really makes a difference in being able to have a full life, you know, a lot of things happening in a full life. And you were a trailblazer as well, playing hockey all through college and really taking a study abroad class in Austria when you normally for hockey players, it wasn't something that they figure in a normal time in which students go to study abroad in one of the fall or spring semesters.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge priority for me to play hockey and to study abroad. And so rather than allowing people to say, you kind of have to do one or the other, I found a way to do both because both were very important to me. And after I was able to show people that was a possibility, then more and more hockey players actually participated in study abroad programs. And I think study abroad programs are just huge. The more and more people that can get out and experience different cultures and live in different countries, they just bring so much more back to, you know, to the U.S. and to their life experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've come up with 7 of the junk drawers. We've talked about 3. There's 4 more that we're going to talk about. One has to do with tasks simply not getting done. Another is odds and ends tasks that we pick up as business owners. All of a sudden, things fall in our laps. And email clutter, that's a huge one. And also personal things that end up in our business work lives. So those are really big areas. But before we kind of jump into those, I want to get to know you a little bit better, Sarah, with your background too. The reason that I love getting to know people and understanding more about their background is it informs us when we're working together. We can find some commonalities, but we can also see where we're different and how a person has come up with their expertise, I think is really valuable because then we know where to kind of tap into their expertise. And in an area that you're in, you know, it's not easy to really see the level of expertise that you're bringing to the table immediately. So in our first episode, we just talked about your, you know, upbringing in Maple Grove. And just, it sounds really like an idyllic time for you. You spent a lot of time outside, which helped with you learning how to skate and become a great hockey player and be able to compete at the college level. And you were smack dab in the middle of a brother and a sister. And in a short period of time, your parents had 3 kids to raise. And so you talked about, you know, it was a very collaborative family where there was a lot of communication and negotiating to make sure that, you know, everybody got their needs met and where everybody was involved in different sports and who was going which way and what direction. And so as you grew up and you got out of college and you had some experience teaching English in Vienna and Austria, and then you did an MBA internship in London and worked in Bangkok, Thailand. When did you have time to meet Craig, your husband?
Right. Yeah, it actually happened at the most like inopportune moment ever. It was, so I had applied for the London internship and MBA program, so the London and Bangkok, Thailand program, and that's an 18-month program. So it was 1 year in London, and then I spent about 6 months in Asia. And my husband and I actually met and started dating 5 months before I left for this internship program. And so definitely not the most ideal time, but I also wasn't going to kind of let this new relationship or him hold me back from this amazing experience that I was able to have. And because that's just, I guess, my personality. I wanted to go, and that's what I was going to do.
Yeah, yeah. You had some goals, a vision, a direction.
Yeah. And I knew the company that I was working with at the time when I applied for the internship, I knew that wasn't the right spot for me and didn't want to, you know, stay there or really even, you know, find another role within a company, you know, in Minneapolis. I really wanted the opportunity. I was in my mid-20s, you know, the opportunity to experience more of the world. And it was an amazing opportunity. Had a great time. My husband, I actually ended up, so he never had a passport before he met me. So at the point when we had met, I had already spent a semester abroad. I had already spent 9 months teaching in Vienna, Austria. And so I had been, you know, lived in Europe and been outside of the U.S., you know, quite a bit and done the backpacking and the traveling. And my family was used to me just being like, yeah, get up and go and be like, yeah, I'll see you when I come back from my program. And his family was definitely not, you know, none of them had ever studied abroad or lived abroad. You know, like I said, he didn't even have a passport. And so it was very, you know, very interesting when I left. And well, one, we were only dating for 5 months. So we were both, I guess, you know, we'll see if it works out. If not, maybe we'll see, meet up again in a year and a half after my internship program was done. But we kept in communication and, you know, it just felt right to stay together. And I actually ended up talking him into quitting his job and coming to travel with me in Asia for those 6 months that I was in Bangkok, Thailand, finishing up the MBA portion of the program. So
what was he doing while you were finishing up the program?
Right. So the MBA portion, it was like 9 to 5 classes and for 3 months. And so we knew going in, like, you are going to have to find something to do because I'm going to be in class all day. And then I'm not going to be able, you know, come home and entertain you at night because I'm going to have to be doing my homework and, you know, I'm taking this MBA program seriously, so you got to find something else to do. And what ended up happening is, there was a month off between the London program and the Thailand program. So he actually met me in London, and then we traveled for that month. We went and did a like 2 week safari in Africa, and then we went to an island in Thailand and did our open water scuba diving certification. And we both fell in love with scuba diving. And so what ended up happening is when we kind of got back to Bangkok, got settled into my apartment, my husband was like, yeah, I don't know if this Bangkok thing is quite for me. I think I'm going to go back to the island and I'm going to get my dive master certification while you're doing your MBA program. And so he ended up going back to the island. He figured if I was getting a master's, he might as well get a master's at the same time. Although I think it's unfair because his master's was a lot more fun than mine was. We would, you know, call each other and talk about, oh, how was your day? He's like, oh, I went scuba diving and I saw, you know, a turtle and I saw a whale shark and it was awesome. And I was like, I had 4 hours of Asian Pacific economics. It wasn't, you know, wasn't quite the same experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So he ended up doing that, which was, you know, wonderful. It was kind of sad because we had spent all this time apart. We're finally back together and then we're spending part of it apart again. But it just allowed us to each be in a place that, you know, worked for us at the time. And then we did have some time, you know, in the middle of the program to do some traveling because I had already written my dissertation when I was in London. So I didn't have to take that time to write it when I was there. And then we did quite a bit of about 6 weeks of traveling after I graduated. So we did get to spend some time together traveling after, you know, outside of my school hours.
Nice. Do you guys scuba dive now?
We went on our honeymoon. We did a live aboard dive ship down in the Bahamas, but we have not been since.
Oh, so that's hard to scuba dive anywhere locally.
You can. We just haven't been brave enough to do the cold. We started out in Thailand, which is like one of the best places to scuba dive. So it's like comparing that experience to, you know, a lake in Minnesota. I've heard that they can be a lot of fun to scuba dive. It's just, it's very different than what we experience.
ocean diving. Different.
dark lake, dark cold lake. It's a little different.
exactly. So you've got two children, Cody and Hannah. So is Cody 8 years old?
Yep. Cody's my 8-year-old and Hannah is my 6-year-old. So they're third and first grade this year.
Okay. And how has hockey worked its way back into your lives?
Yeah, both my kids play hockey. My son's been playing, what is this? This is his fourth year playing hockey. So he started when he was kindergarten. Now he's a third grader. And this is my daughter's second year of hockey. And they both absolutely love it, which is great. Like, we don't have to worry about having to talk them into, you know, going to the arena, even when it's, my son has a ton of like 6:10 or 6:40 practices, and he thinks that they're the most amazing things. He loves being the first one on the ice. So he thinks it's the best. He told me one time, he's like, "Mommy, it's the best thing in the world." And I get to go out on the ice and I'm the first one.
Oh, wow.
I was like, your definition of the best thing in the world and mine are slightly different, because I would rather be in bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. But it's great that he enjoys it.
Yeah, especially because to be the first one, you have to, that's early, and you have to get all suited up, which takes time, and, skates on. And well, good for him. That's it. It sounds like a budding passion.
Yeah. They both love it, which is wonderful. They do really well. They work really hard at it. They're not afraid of falling down, which is a huge trait when you're talking about hockey, because you fall down all the time.
Yeah. Lucky they're close to the ground.
Yes. It does help them bounce back a lot better than I do when I fall now.
Yeah. So in our conversation, we were able to meet in person, which was really nice, in Maple Grove. And you were telling me about your experience at Target for 6 years. And I was really struck with the ways in which you were able to get things done and how, you know, worked yourself basically almost out of a job.
Yeah.
So tell us a few things about that experience.
Yeah, that was kind of my MO with all of my careers. I started out with smaller organizations, so I thought, oh, maybe it's just because it's a smaller company. But even then, going to Target, which is a large organization, I think when I was there, they had about 14,000 corporate employees and, 300 some thousand employees in total, if you count, everyone within the stores. It was a very large organization. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to be able to, this will keep me busy. It'll be wonderful. But I found even at Target that I would still do the same thing where I would get a job, a task, I would get trained in on it. And then I would find ways to improve it, automate it, make it more efficient. And pretty much every single role I had there, I would get it from 40 hours and down to about 20 hours of work.
Yeah, that's really incredible. So when you're talking about, saving businesses money, I mean, you're really serious. This is a game changer, and how to really scale businesses, they need someone like you. So you've also started a blog, which is how I got into saying, I think I'd really like to talk about these business junk drawers. I've never heard about them. And I thought the way you organize them and how we're planning to talk about them was just something that every business owner needs to, think about. And it's a way to look at it from a different perspective. You also started a vlog. So tell me a little bit about how you're doing the vlog. What is your focus, and what are you doing there?
Yeah. So my main goal is to provide really the most valuable content I can think of to my followers and help them, like the business junk drawer, like really help them see, what is truly going on within a lot of organizations. Cause especially the way that we work a lot of times is so digital that it's hard to see what's happening. So being able to kind of relate it to things that people can relate to helps people more easily see, okay, what's going on. And then that can then, maybe turn on a light bulb within their minds of like, oh, okay, maybe there is a a better way.
Yeah.
And, hopefully I can, start learning how to create a better way or start asking the right questions. And then that's where kind of the vlogs or the process ninja tips kind of come into play with giving people those really, specific detail. Okay, here's how you can have an impact. Here's how you can make changes. The ones that I've been doing most recently have a lot to do with Excel and just kind of some of the tips and tricks of like, here's how you can easily move within Excel. Here's how you can freeze the top row so that you always know, what that header is, or, kind of these little things that I found that, a lot of people that I work with, these are the things that when I'm sitting at their desk and showing them different ways to make their lives easier, these are those little things that I keep finding myself, telling different people over and over again and repeating all the time. And so I figured this, a vlog and having those weekly tips was a great way to be able to get that information to more and more people.
Yeah. So give us your website. We'll have them also in her bio and throughout the show notes.
Yep. So it's clearsimplebusiness.com.
Yeah. So she is going to use her process ninja tips in 2022 to really help you become more efficient. So in our fourth, I'm just going to name them. There's four tips that we're going over today, our four different business junk drawers. So the first one has to do with tasks simply not getting done. So things fall back into the laps of business owners all the time. What kinds of tasks that simply don't get done are you referring to in this particular junk drawer?
Right. A lot of these are, so you have a great meeting and people have great ideas and everyone's in agreement like, let's do that. That'll make a huge impact within the organization. But then no one actually takes ownership of that after the meeting is done. And so nothing actually happens. And so it's a lot of talk of the future and how great the future will be, but then you're missing out on that action of, okay, here are the steps that we need to take in order to create that, bright new future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find, business leaders, it can be easy. A lot of us are we're very futuristic. We're very driven on the what could be and not always as in tune with the present moment and how to get to those next steps.
Yeah. Yeah. So breaking them down and having someone take ownership is great. And business owners are notorious for, hanging on, me included, to things that need to be delegated, or not having, a person to delegate to is also kind of an issue. And a lot of times the people that we are working with, they've already got a full load. So figuring that out and working with the team would be helpful. What other tips have you got for tasks simply not getting done? How can we get them done more outside of business ownership? Someone taking ownership of a task, and also figuring out which tasks need to be delegated and how to do that.
Right. Yeah. The assigning an owner is really key, because then and then also having regular updates on the progress of
you can't
that
just
task.
dump a task on someone.
right. Yeah, you just kind of dump it in the heat of the moment, like, oh, this is great, but then kind of let it trickle away, and then it kind of gets forgotten. So it's really important to have that, have that solid assignment, really communicate the expectations and the outcome very clearly, the way that you're, expecting it, because we're all individuals. And if we're given a task, we're each going to complete it in a different way. And it may end up having an outcome that's different than what's expected, which, sometimes that it can be a good surprise that it's an outcome that you weren't expecting. But if you know that it's like, this is our target and this is where we need to go, then you need to make sure to really communicate those expectations.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Because people aren't mind readers. And, it's very easy to assume, you can assume so much that everyone knows everything that and every little detail. And so I don't need to tell you all these little details. But, if you want it to be done right, then you do have to share to those.
Well, one of the reasons too, yeah, that some business owners don't delegate is because explaining how to do something is very cumbersome and it takes a lot of time. So what do you suggest tackling the tasks that simply are not getting done? So you've given ownership. Let's say you've clearly communicated the expectations with the deadlines and how the check-in, how that's going to work. How do you address the how-to documentation for things?
Yes. How-to documentation is, you know, if you want something to get done the same way and for it to be easy to transition a task from person to person. So like you said, a lot of times people don't delegate because it's like, oh, I know it takes me time and it takes me energy, but it's going to take me twice as much energy and time to teach it to someone else. And I just don't want to do that. I don't feel like doing that. And there's no way to avoid that time. Like that time you put in, you have to give that extra time. You have to teach that person how to do it because they're not going to know how to do it right away.
Yeah. There's a number of things that I've been thinking about. Like you can have the person write down the tasks. You can have the tasks typed up yourself. You can videotape, or you can also just audio tape a process or something. But there, you know, explore your best way of teaching and try to simplify it in the best way that you can. Is my take on what, you know, since talking with you, Sarah Becker.
Anything else? A lot of different tools. You can sit down with the person. You can have screenshotted how-to documentation for click here, click there. You can do videos, but it is all going to take more time and it is all going to take communication. So there's no quick and easy fix, but there's definitely a lot of different tools where you can make it work kind of faster and easier for you.
Yeah. And the good thing is that once you delegate it, it's not going to end up back in your lap, which is our second one. Odds and ends tasks you pick up. So a lot of times if there's a transition in, let's take, for example, a business that has high turnover, you know, business owners end up, you know, picking up the slack in between the time in which you're hiring a new person. What are some key strategies that seem to work best when we're addressing those kinds of issues?
It's really looking at the tasks. So like a lot of those, okay, this employee, they left and they were doing, you know, these 20 tasks were on their workload. And when an employee leaves, it's a really good opportunity to look at what they were doing and really analyze, do we still need this anymore? And to kind of get that role and those tasks and those expectations buttoned up before you hire a new person. Because sometimes, you know, if we're continuously going and just the way the world seems to work is we just keep going and getting faster and faster, then everything keeps piling up. It's kind of like that snowball rolling down a hill where I started with, you know, 5 tasks and now I have all of these that are just piled up on top of me. And rather than continuing to let that snowball roll, it's really slowing it down and then looking at the different layers of that and saying, do I really actually need to do this anymore? Does our business still need this? Because sometimes we're just doing things because that's what we've always done. But then we find that, oh, we actually don't need this step anymore because now we do it a different way. So this task can be completely eliminated. And I actually saw this pretty big when I was working at Target. So one of the new areas that I went into, we did a lot of reporting and we had about 50 different monthly reports. And once we started, you know, and people were churning out these reports for who knows how long. And rather than saying, all right, great, we're just going to continue to do all 50 of these reports every month from now until forever, we actually stopped and asked people and understood, like, what are these reports being used for? And we realized that, you know, all of the reports, all 50 reports had a reason and a valuable reason to be created, but there were only about 8 of the reports that were actually being used at the moment.
Yeah. It's like with your finances, you know, you can have a million reports built out of your finances.
Right.
But figuring out which are the ones that give you the most information that can really help you be more efficient and make decisions that you need to make. So it's really clarifying what the purpose is for like monthly reports that you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I mean, you have all that data, and sometimes, you know, some of those reports, it's like, okay, we have, you know, we need this information, and in 3 months we need to make this big decision. So we're looking at these reports very, you know, intensively for like these 3 months, and then we make that decision, and now, you know, we don't really need those anymore. And so just making sure, you know, that's a big, you know, leadership to, you know, report maker, doer, employee conversation and communication that needs to take place. If, you know, if you're not using a report anymore, those people need that permission to stop doing it, because if they're making the report, they're just going to assume that someone is using it until they get that communication, you know, communicated differently. And so that, you know, and if you think of that, you know, target, there are, you know, a lot of different people, but say you're a small organization and you have one person that's doing 50 reports every month, and you as a business leader are only looking at 8 of them, they're wasting 52, you know, it might take say it takes an hour per report, you know, that's 42 hours right there of time that they are completely wasting, that I'm sure you could find more valuable things for them to participate in and them to work on besides those reports that are going nowhere.
Yeah. So looking at the tasks from a dollar cost per perspective. Yeah. How much are we investing here, and how much am I paying for this person to produce this? And is that a good use of their time? And is that a good use of the company's dollars? Yeah.
Right. Very good. Yep. And opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, kind of that futuristic, like, well, what could I now be doing? You know, what other junk drawer areas could I be fixing with those
right.
42 hours worth of time? Like that's a whole week.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of time where people could be, you know, providing a higher level.
Well, they could address the other business junk drawers.
Yeah.
They could be.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Number 3 is email clutter. It's a huge area. So what are the red flags that surface when email clutter is like getting out of hand, and how big of a problem are you seeing?
Oh, email clutter is huge. It's just shocking sometimes seeing, you know, there's so many people who have, you know, hundreds or even thousands of emails within their inbox. And it's just, I mean, thinking of that person's inbox or looking at it just is, it makes me just, you're completely exhausted. Like that, all that information in front of you, it takes so much energy for your mind to kind of sift through, all right, where are the important pieces? And that stress of, okay, did I miss something important, or how am I going to remember this important thing? And it's probably one of the number one areas where errors can occur within organizations.
Okay. So where's the best place to start?
So the best place is in your individual email inbox. And
oh, it's so much easier going to somebody else's and telling them what's wrong.
That's true.
How to clean it up.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. All right, it always comes back to us.
That's what I do. It's easier for me to look at other people. But yes, eventually we have to take ownership of our own stuff.
Okay.
And the biggest thing, the first thing I tell people to do is unsubscribe from all of those emails, like those newsletters that you don't look at. If you're not ready to unsubscribe, then create a folder for that newsletter, or even just a generic newsletter folder, and create a rule so that those newsletters never even get into your inbox.
Oh, really? Well, then what if I use that as a place where, you know, it reminds me, oh, yeah, I do want to read this daily or whatever.
Well, you can always still see when you put it into the folder that that folder will still show like the number of unread emails.
I see. Okay. Yeah,
and
right.
So you'll still have that reminder of like, oh, yes. So you'll be able to see that you have newsletters in there that you haven't read or you haven't seen yet, because you'll have that number in there. Okay. But then it's not within your inbox, because typically it, well, one, a lot of people don't even really read those newsletters. But the ones that they do read, they're waiting for, you know, they have a free 10 minutes free before a meeting or something. And so they don't need those in their inbox all the time, reminding that, hey, you haven't read me yet. Hey, you haven't read me yet. Hey, you haven't read me yet. And then you have to, your mind is going, I'll get there. I'll get to you. I'm sorry. I'm so busy. And it's just, that's a lot of energy to have that, you know, that kind of cycle going through your mind on a probably hour, multiple times an hour basis.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would say unsubscribe from as many as you can. Create rules.
Not from We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast, because I know you're listening and
that's
reading.
That's true. Yes. Keep that one in your inbox. That one, you don't even need to create a rule to send it to another folder, but all the other ones, send those to a different folder.
Okay. That sounds good.
And then there's also a big area I see a lot within organizations is that they do a lot of their project management tasks like just via email. So there are a lot of opportunities if you have like a project going or finding different ways to communicate that's not through email. And so I work with a virtual assistant and she does a lot of my low-level how-to documentation.
Okay.
And I put all the information, we have a spreadsheet where when I have a new video I do a video and then she captures the screenshots. And so when I have a new video, I put that in the spreadsheet. I give her all the information that she needs of, all right, do a how-to. This is the title of the how-to. This is the due date. And, you know, here are the time snippet of where it is in the video. And that's how she gets her new tasks.
So with your virtual assistant, is she with a company or an individual?
She is through a company.
And what's the name of the company? If you like it, can you recommend it to others?
Yep, it's Angeco.
How do you spell that?
Angeco. It's Angeco, ANGCO.biz.
Okay.
Great. So I work through her, and then she has a handful of virtual assistants that have their own specialties and
good. Great. Yep. Yeah. So in 2022, what are some new habits or strategies that we can start with our gaining control of our email boxes?
It's learning rules. A really solid, sometimes hard to attain goal is for your inbox to be your to-do items.
Oh.
And so that's where you can go and have a small number, so you don't want 100, to-do items. But having that small number where it's like, okay, these items I know I have to do something with. And making sure, because a lot of times you get on, that email chain, so maybe there's, 10 people on a project and there's a lot of communication back and forth. Making sure to only have the most recent communication and kind of deleting all of those other 10 emails that are on that email chain. And so that can pretty quickly reduce the number of emails that are within your inbox and help your inbox to be more of that to-do list. And really delete. Like, I know people are so afraid to delete, but a lot of times we hold on to things that we don't necessarily need to hold on to. Kind of like the clutter in our house. Like, just think of how great it feels when you go into your closet one or two times a year and you pull out everything that you don't wear anymore and you get rid of that and your closet just looks that much brighter. So kind of thinking of that.
Okay.
And, in your closet, it's just, those are the things I wear.
What do you suggest for employers? How to address, employees, they're noticing that they're becoming less efficient because their email box has become out of control. What are your suggestions there for addressing that with employees?
I think employers, it would be a good initiative for them to encourage their employees to to find different ways. So like I was talking about with my VA, instead of having 20 different emails going back and forth, mm-hmm. we have, you know, our project document. And that's where we both go for to find those updates. Oh, and so finding different ways to communicate that do not involve sending an email.
All right. So collaboration sounds like the key there.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Collaboration, communicating, you know, in a Word document, in an Excel document, just to get out of that kind of email hell.
Yeah, right. Totally that. And our fourth area is personal things. So what are the personal things that can end up in this particular business junk drawer?
The most common personal thing is our health. So we don't feel like we have enough time to take care of ourselves. So we don't feel like we have enough time to go to the doctor, to, you know, go to the gym, or to start eating healthy.
Yeah.
And we just continue to put that into the junk drawer. And it's that whole like, oh, I'll get to it, you know, next week, or I'll get to it next month, or, you know, now it's the new year, so now I can get to it. But those are really things that should not be put in a junk drawer ever. Those are really things that should be part of, you know, your day life.
Okay. And is this an organizational issue or a deeper psychological issue?
It's a little of both. So a lot of organizations have kind of unseen norms.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the undercurrents where they don't even maybe realize that it's a value or an expectation that the organization has. A lot of that has to do with, you know, the number of hours that you're working. And if I work more hours, that means that I'm a more valuable employee. And so that's a very, I think, deeply ingrained mindset of a lot of organizations and a lot of just our like US culture in general.
Yeah.
Is that if I'm busy, it means that I'm really important. And so without even being aware of it, we're individually and as organizations very focused and sometimes even rewarding those individuals who are busy without necessarily looking at, were they productive? Were they valuable? It's just like, well, they put in 60 hours a week. So of course they're, you know, our most valuable employee. But in my experience, you know, starting a role at 40 hours a week and then getting it down to 20 hours a week, I actually ended up being a more valuable employee by working half the amount of time because I was getting it done, you know, faster with fewer errors. It was more efficient. And then I was actually able to spend that free time that I had and that free energy and creative space that I had to solve and tackle, you know, more important issues.
Yeah. Companies can reinforce the neglecting of our human needs by
yes.
the processes they put in place for us to be doing. And business owners do the, you know, do the same things within themselves as well, you know, for not taking time to be healthy because they're meeting everybody else's needs. But what happens when we stop meeting our human needs, we start not feeling well and we become miserable people to be around all the time. And if you're miserable, your employees are going to be miserable. Or if your employees are not taking care of themselves, they're going to be miserable coworkers. So what are the signs that our businesses have become more important than our personal relationships? What have you been seeing?
When it never gets turned off.
Okay.
Like I understand that, you know, we have emails on our phones, that we can do a good chunk of our work remotely. But it is still important that, you know, things need to get turned off. People need to be able to take vacation. They need to be able to be done at 5 p.m. You know, they need to have that relaxation time so that they can then come back to be, you know, that much better of a worker when they've had that rest.
In this area, I was also thinking about you. So you're in business 6 years now, or let's see, 2016. So 4, 5, 6 years. Yeah. You've been in business. You've got two young kids. They were born into you being an entrepreneur. So they're experiencing what it's like to live in an entrepreneurial home. How do you work this out for yourself to make sure that you get your needs met? Because the business takes a lot. You want to continue a healthy relationship with Craig and really, you know, raise two great kids.
Yeah, I have very solid boundaries with where my work hours are and where my work hours are not. And I don't work more than a 40-hour work week. A lot of times I even work less than that. So I have flexibility during the days to, you know, do things with my kids if they're home or if they have school events. And then I don't very rarely. On occasion, there'll be an event, you know, business event that I will go to in the evenings, but that's maybe a once per quarter thing for me. It's 9 to 5. Actually, it's usually 9 to 4. The kids get home around 4. And whether I'm done with everything or not, I shut down. I walk upstairs. My office is downstairs. I walk upstairs and I'm done for the night. And that thing will be there for me in the morning. I think another thing, like, you know, we have this busy makes me really important mindset, but then we also have this unrealistic sense of urgency. Of everything needs to get done now. In our society, you know, everything is so instantaneous that everything is now urgent. And so I urge the business leaders that I work with and the employees to really stop and think, if I got this, like say it's a report. If I got this report tomorrow at 10 a.m. versus making my employees give me this report after they've had dinner, you know, with their family, or maybe they didn't even have dinner with their family because they had to get this report. And so they get me this report at 7 p.m. versus, you know, the next morning at 10 p.m. How much of a difference is that actually going to make?
Yeah.
And making sure that they're also communicating that to their employees, because if it's, you know, 4 o'clock and they say, hey, I need this report, and that employee is thinking, oh, I have to get this to them before I'm done with my day, and they're doing it, you know, sometimes it's unbeknownst to the leader of what it takes to get that information. And they think that they have to spend their evening doing that report when the business leader is like, you know, I just need it by noon tomorrow and that'll be good enough. Like making sure that communication is there and then really challenging that urgency, challenging that I need this, you know, by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, well, do you? And what difference would that make? Because I've seen so many toxic work environments get created because of this sense of urgency and this sense of my thing is the most important. And I don't care what it takes for you to get it to me. You need to get it to me. You need to drop everything you're doing and get it to me as soon as you can. And
yeah,
not
so,
really caring about how that is impacting that person who has to.
Yeah. So that. Breaking down the task to understand what's the real deadline. And
right.
is this sense of urgency, where is it coming from? You know, sometimes we're, you know, when you're feeling overwhelmed and out of control, you're not really thinking through things. And so really, it seems to me like in addressing these 7, you know, business junk drawers, so 3 in our last conversation, 4 in this conversation, the bottom line really is making the time to think more about what's important. And when things are getting out of control, what does that mean? And keeping the junk drawers in perspective, you know, like to a minimum. But I like that, you know, until you've identified them, they've been there. We can all say, oh yeah, oh, but I hadn't thought of it as a junk drawer. But when I think of it as a junk drawer, then I'm thinking, oh, junk drawers, you know, you just throw a bunch of stuff in and you just leave them there. But in business, that's very problematic. And so keeping one junk drawer for everything, well, I don't know why I'm saying that, but I mean, each area, you know, are 7 areas that we create junk drawers in, that it's good to have a process in place to address them and to take a look at them and to really go into more depth about it. And a lot of times when we're feeling, especially if you're doing collaborative work, you're putting pressure on people because it's usually, you know, self-generated, right? I'm feeling pressure because this deadline is, you know, is coming up and I have a different way. You know, I'm not okay with running right up to the deadline, and maybe the other person is. And so they're working out and renegotiating your workflow to collaborate more effectively really works well.
Yes. Yes. That, I mean, process improvement is a huge amount of communication.
Yeah.
And it's remembering that we do have to communicate. It's remembering that people can't read our minds. People don't have the same experiences that we have. And so they're not solving the problem in the same way that we are.
Yeah.
And so working together to, you know, communicate all of those details is huge.
And it's okay to talk about your feelings. You know, we all get frustrated and we all really feel pressure and we all get aggravated in, you know, when we collaborate together, both at ourselves and at other people. And some people are more efficient just in general than others. And so being compassionate with each other by talking, you know, about how you're feeling and what the deeper levels of what's going on, you know, like you were talking about earlier of the undercurrent. There's this mm-hmm. emotional undercurrent that can be emotionally, you know, it's emotionally driven. So instead of the pressure, you know, the anger or the hard look or, you know, instead of doing that, you know, identify what you're feeling and talk about the reasons that you're feeling this way and how can they help you, or I'm experiencing your anger or your frustration
right.
with me. You know, I'm really messed up here. You know, the sooner that you own what isn't working, the more effective you'll be in resolving what the issue is and not get into a dance of destruction with each other.
Right. Well, and also creating a safe emotional environment to not have the answer. So to be able
nice.
To have
yep.
those conversations of, you know, I don't know how we're going to solve this.
Yeah. That sounds terrific. Wow. We've covered a lot of territory. So I just want to revisit. So the first business junk drawer that we talked about in our first conversation was regarding, what was the first one?
So anything.
Oh my gosh. Of course, the money stuff. You know, that's the biggest one. It's really important and critical. The second is customer service issues. The third is quality assurance. The fourth is tasks simply not getting done. The fifth is odds and ends that you pick up. And the sixth one we were just talking? Oh, email. Can't forget that. And the seventh one is personal things. So not taking care of ourselves because we're so busy meeting these other deadlines that may not even be the right deadlines that we have in place. Anyways,
<Yeah. laughs>
you're a treasure trove of information and insight. And I like the way you really get to know your customers and how they work and the processes that they put in place. So you're not coming in, you know, judgmental. You're coming in with trying to figure out, you know, where are the glitches and work, you know, using the workflow processes to help identify them. And you've just been totally lovely. So thank you for being here.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Great. All right. And thanks, listeners, for tuning in. And let's really get on top of things this year. I think we've been through the glut of a lot of intense 2 years emotionally. And so now I think we can really move a little bit more faster because we're not, you know, plagued with so much emotional drama that we've been experiencing. I'm hoping our lives are a little lighter. We've still got a lot ahead of us, but I hope we have the energy. Let's use our energy differently to take charge of our lives. Right, Sarah?
Yes, well said.
Okay. All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. We're in this another year. We'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.